Hello and welcome to episode 98 of the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Derek.
I'm Craig.
And this is Tink.
Today, in our docket of topics, we are going to be talking about the new Movies Anywhere service. Tank has things he wants to talk about with Japanese Christian media. And Craig is bringing to us an article from Wired about the problem with viral outrage. So without further ado, let's get started. So I wanted to kick off our topics with a bit of a lighter topic this week. We're going to talk about the new Movies Anywhere service that's been announced. This is kind of a coalition among Disney, Sony, 20th Century Fox, Universal, and Warner Brothers. And what this does, if I don't know, have either of you? I don't know if the Disney Movies Anywhere service was in your guys' countries at all. When it started, you would have been in America, Tank, but Disney kind of started this thing like 2-3 years ago or something like that, where they kind of partnered with Google, Apple, and I think maybe Amazon too at that point, to connect your accounts together. And if you buy any movie of theirs on any of those services, it would then get populated to your Disney Movies Anywhere account, as well as to your other, you know, your Google account, your Amazon account, whatever. So this is kind of the next stage of that, where they're getting more companies on board. And now you can hook it up to your Apple account, your Amazon account, your Google Play account, your Vudu account, which is like a Walmart thing, I think, that nobody ever uses. And I want to say there's one more. There might not be one more. But now it's just Movies Anywhere. You can watch it anywhere. As far as I can tell, like, it's not just an America thing. Can you guys confirm or deny that?
That's Google.
I will try and confirm it or deny while we're on the air.
Okay, cool.
That the Disney movie Anywhere, you know, would imply.
Yes.
That if it doesn't work in Japan, then
it wouldn't be anywhere. Yeah, yep. But I mean, you know, they do things like this. Like Netflix is kind true. Of like a, you, I guess, you know, I would hope it's like worldwide, which would be amazing for, you know, there's always these weird geographical boundaries between, for media, like you can buy a certain thing in the U.S., on the iTunes store, but you can't do that in Britain or the other way around, or like this kind of needs to die. And I'm so happy. It seems to be like the movie companies are getting together and saying, hey, people aren't buying movies anymore. We need to incentivize people to actually buy movies again, because these streaming services are so good. So I'm just super happy about this, because it's kind of crazy that Apple was able to agree with these companies on Apple in particular, because Apple is such a like a keep you in your you know, walled garden sort of thing and that sort of thing. But this is great. I can watch my movies anywhere. And apparently the apps are also everywhere. Android, iOS, Apple TV, all your streaming boxes. It's apparently a very good app too. So this is a beautiful thing for the future of media, and I'm so excited. Have you guys heard of this at all? Are you into any of this?
I haven't heard much about it. It does sound good to me. I'm pretty sure it's available in Australia from a quick Google search.
Mm-hmm.
And in other interesting news, the logo for Disney's Movies Anywhere, which you mentioned before, is extremely similar to the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's logo.
I saw that. I was Googling around to see if Australia, if it was in Australia, and I saw these news headlines pop up about, this is the same as ABC.
Yeah, that's right. It's not a big deal, but it's kind of interesting that it's so similar and they didn't care. They just run with it anyway. But yeah.
The
Movies Anywhere concept is, I don't know, seems pretty handy.
It's not in Japan. At least I couldn't find it on the Japanese app store. But I did find this app of Goku powering up, as you would expect on the front page of the Japanese app store. So
gotcha. Well, that's cool.
At least you can get that.
Perfect. Okay, so it's not anywhere then, which is disappointing. Hopefully, they will continue to be able to knock down those geographical boundaries. But if you if you sign up, though, you get like a couple of free movies depending on how many accounts you sign up, which is cool. So now I have the new Ghostbusters movie, which I wouldn't have watched unless I did this.
Is that any good?
I have no idea. I haven't watched it yet, but you know, that'll be a mission this week.
I hope it's not as bad as the fourth Indiana Jones movie, for your sake.
You know what? From what I hear, it would be hard to get worse than the fourth Indiana Jones movie, but I haven't seen that either. So we'll just, you know, maybe we'll have to do a little after show next week and we'll talk about my impression of something. I haven't seen the first Ghostbusters, so I'm a terrible person to talk about this. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. You should get on that.
Yeah. Yeah. That and the Goonies. It's like these 80s movies that I never quite hit in my childhood.
I feel like maybe Steam has kind of done this for video games. Like there's quite a few places where you can buy games elsewhere and then you get a key on Steam and that like holds all of your video games. So that's what it kind of sounds like, that it's like this is the front end for where no matter where you buy it, this is where you can go to view it. So I like that. I just wonder, I also would worry, like I hope it doesn't become like that XKCD comic where it's like there's so many different ways to plug in, like you got USB and you got a lightning cable and all these other ones, we should make a new standard.
Yep.
It's like, now there's say 13, it's like now there's 14 new ways to plug in.
Well, kind of the beautiful thing about this is that it literally is just kind of an add-on that adds value everywhere else that you are, so it takes like no commitment to involve yourself in it. It takes no brain power to, when you buy a new movie, transfer it over to your other accounts. It just does it, which is great.
That's pretty nice.
All right, Craig, you have a topic about the problem of viral outrage. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I thought this one was interesting. I mean, it was something that I don't know. I'm assuming you guys came across it during the week. My feed was filled with, sadly, my feed was filled with a particular hashtag at various points this week, which I did find sad, but it also just got me thinking about, some of the issues that contribute to this, but then also some of the reactions that come out from issues like this and you know, the value of those reactions, I suppose. So from the outset, I want to just say that this is linked. I think it originated, I'm not 100% sure, but I think it originated as sort of an offshoot from the Harvey Weinstein scandal.
Yeah. So there's a big media producer named Harvey Weinstein, who there were a bunch of women who just came out recently saying that he had sexually harassed or assaulted or molested them, which is very sad. And then this hashtag Me Too came out of that.
Yeah, so Me Too was a way for women to come together and say, I've also been a victim of harassment or abuse, basically, and it went pretty viral. And some people that I saw were sort of giving some details, like not full details, but kind of explaining why they were doing the hashtag. Mm-hmm. Other people were just simply doing the hashtag. I want to start this by saying that we're obviously not saying that this is a small topic that is irrelevant. If people have suffered abuse and harassment, we believe that is totally wrong, and it's counter to the gospel. It shouldn't have happened, and it's you know, it's sort of trampling on people who are made in the image of God. So,
and it's a topic totally worth discussing. Like we ought to be talking about that topic. Like, great topic.
Yeah. But we're not actually going to be talking about the issue of abuse in this podcast. And that's for a whole bunch of reasons. But one of them is that we're three guys, and this was a specifically sort of involving women hashtag. And so it just wouldn't be appropriate. And Derek, what was the other clarification you wanted to add to that?
Oh, we're going to talk about like this at kind of a meta level. So not talking about the topic itself, but kind of how people jump on bandwagons, how people like really express things online and get this kind of viral outrage thing going.
Correct. So, the article that I came across on Wired, I found was actually quite interesting. There's a number of bits that I sort of would like to touch on. But essentially, it's sort of kicked off by talking about the fact that in some ways, this was like a perfect social media campaign, like a perfect hashtag, because it did sort of quickly bring a whole bunch of people together on a particular topic to have their say. It did harness the quick response time of social media, and it also escalated states of outrage. So lots of people were jumping on really quickly and getting quite frustrated. But the person who wrote the article also made the point that it had kind of exhausted everyone to the point where they couldn't actually meaningfully act on that outrage that they were feeling. So kind of like just getting flooded with a whole bunch of these Me Too hashtags just built up this sense of almost exhaustion of like the issue is too big. How do we even tackle it sort of thing? So she says, in other words, hashtag Me Too, despite the best intentions of so many participating, is everything that's wrong with social media. Then she talks about, the fact that I guess pre-social media, the point of speaking out about something like this would be to stop the abuser, the person who's doing the wrong thing, from continuing to do that. It would be to actively seek some kind of change in the situation. Whereas now, I guess it can be a whole range of things, but it can be more about sort of ticking the box and showing that if you respond to someone's hashtag someone who's put this up on their social media wall or Twitter feed, it can be sort of just quickly showing that you're in agreement with them, or that you're wanting to stand in solidarity with them, or that you're also outraged by it alongside them. And so then her point from that is this kind of quick response and then feeling like we've maybe ticked that box is actually counterproductive in terms of the actual emotion that we're feeling leading to some kind of transformative change. So the analogy she uses is like someone who just eats food all the time without actually needing to, like they're not actually hungry, but they just keep snacking. She says, just as a habitual snacker eats without feeling hungry, a habitual online shamer might express outrage without actually feeling outraged. At this point, it's probably just helpful to open it up and see what you guys thought, whether you noticed it, and what you were sort of, how you sort of processed the whole thing. But I guess I just feel a little bit uneasy. I resonate with some other stuff in the article. When you like someone's Me Too, should you like it? Should you sad face it? Should you angry face it? And then if you've done any, does liking it mean that you're standing with them, or does liking it mean you like the fact that they got abused? Well, surely not that. But, it's hard to know which one is the right one to kind of show the correct emotion in this situation. And then if that's all you do, is that actually doing any good anyway, kind of thing. So I think it's interesting, this thing of combined emotion feeling, like we're all feeling the same emotion together at the same time, and that's being heightened by a huge degree because of the sheer volume of people participating. But then it's almost like there's so much and it's so big that everyone just kind of goes, oh, well, that was that. Let's move on. What do you think? Is that how you kind of saw it as well? Or?
There is, I agree with this article. This article is really good. I hadn't thought about it in quite this way before. In other circumstances, I probably would have thought about it a little bit. I just didn't think about it with this hashtag, but it's a good thing to call out the fact that we're spending a lot of energy on, like a ton of energy on a little change, or like maybe just kind of changing the perception in society a little bit. But what that does when we're spending that energy on that, we then, like, we feel like we've accomplished something, But not perhaps as much as we could have accomplished if we spent that energy, doing other things. Now, the thing with the MeToo hashtag is there's going to be people who've had past harassment issues that they can't really address anymore. Because it's been so far past, there's not any legal anything you can do. Social, you're not going to be able to do a whole lot. But so I'm not. I guess what I'm trying to say is that there's not zero benefit to something to this kind of online outrage, because it can change people's perceptions. But it is good to be aware of how much energy you are spending on something when so much of the people around you agree with you. I don't know. What I gather from this article is be aware of the emotion that you're expending or the energy that you're expending on an activity and how much benefit you actually gain from that. And is there something else that I can be doing to benefit more than engaging online? So
yeah.
should I be spending that energy towards finding some place to donate, or like, so an example I might pull out would be President Trump's tweets about Puerto Rico like a couple of weeks ago that were entirely inappropriate and like demeaning the president or of Puerto Rico, whatever. Anyway, do you expend that energy by denouncing it on Twitter and saying this is awful, hashtag whatever, or do you put that towards actually communicating with other people about this, saying, hey, there's actually an issue with Puerto Rico, we should donate, we should do, you know, whatever we can to help. So it's all an exercise in how do you channel what you're feeling. And is this the best way to channel my emotion? Sometimes that can be the Me Too hashtag. Maybe it could be something else. But a lot of people just don't think about what they're doing before they do it. Thinking critically.
Or what they're doing after they do it.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah.
I think a lot of people do it and then go, okay, well, that's all I can do or all I should do. Right. I mean, I actually had a friend. I mean, the article talks about, you know, the whole thing of social is that we see what other people post and they see what we post and they see our reactions to what they post.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a big part of this for me is what's your motivation? Is your motivation to actually stand in solidarity with someone who's had an evil done against them? Or is mm-hmm. is our motivation to look like we are standing in, do you know what I mean? And,
yeah.
and that mm-hmm. may not be a completely false thing, but it could be that we're wanting to be part of the group that is seen to be by other people standing against something because it seems like the right thing to do because everyone else is doing it. And again, I'm not saying that it isn't the right thing to do. It is the right thing to do to stand mm-hmm. against these things. But if the motivation is so that it will be seen by others who agree with us already on this, then maybe that's, you know, maybe social is not the best way to do that. Maybe if you've got a friend who posts something about this, you know, calling them and saying, do you, you know, can I support you? Is there any, you know, do you want to catch up? Do you want to chat about it? Is there, you know, maybe there's mm-hmm. other ways of reaching out and being real with people that social media can't serve. When you mentioned donating, I did have a friend who lives in the US actually, who posted quite a big lengthy thing on his Facebook that sort of apologized for times when he may have contributed not to violence or anything, but, you know, to not standing up for, you know, when jokes have been said or something that were inappropriate and things like that, and then prompting his friends to join him in donating to an organization that fights against gender violence, basically, towards women. So, you know, that was a proactive, I guess, in a way, that was, a somewhat helpful sort of reaction. He was at least thinking the next step is, what can I actually do that might make a difference in this situation rather than mm-hmm. what can I just post so that I've posted something about the situation?
Exactly.
I guess. Do you have any thoughts at this point, Tank?
Just to add, maybe maybe cliche, maybe new. I don't know how commonly these kind of things are said, so I'm throw them out there. Like the standing out thing. One thing that was said about missions, and I think it's true for this, is like a light or a candle in a very bright room where there's already like a ton of lights or a ton of light bulbs or the sun or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, we're the light of the world and we're the salt of the earth. If you have a light where it's already really bright, like, sure, you're going to add some brightness to the room, but you go to a room that's completely dark and then you light a candle, it completely changes the atmosphere of the room. Mm-hmm. And that's, of course, a call to missions overseas where there are no or very few Christians. But I think it's applicable here too, you know, like on social media, we're just adding our candles to an already really well lit room. If all of our friends are sharing Me Too, and that's where we say, oh yeah, this is where we're going to take our stand. Well, that room's really well lit. Like, where are the right places? Mm-hmm. And then another metaphor also is like sharing the gospel broadly. It's like, if we're all just putting the same gospel seed in the exact same place, you just make a big pile that rots and stinks. You know, you're not actually spreading it broadly. And
so it gets eaten by birds or whatever. Same,
yeah, exactly. So the same application is just, I think that may be a good application here that we, I like what Craig said about, calling the friend. That's a really good idea. And I think I've only seen one Me Too post. I don't use social media that much. But that one Me Too post, I was like, oh, I really didn't know that. And I really like your suggestion, Craig. I think I'll contact that person and be like, hey, I didn't know this about you. Is there anything I can do? So, mm-hmm. So that was a really good suggestion. So thank you for that.
No worries.
So that whole discussion with the viral outrage thing, that was convicting to me. We're still, instead of doing the ad break, which this is the ad break, we're still going to be pointing you to the Puerto Rico donation. Well, not specifically Puerto Rico, but like general hurricane damage, you know, support. So what we're doing this month, if you haven't heard yet, is we're pointing you towards Samaritan's Purse to give to help hurricane victims and those places, those states and islands that were hit really hard by like the 3, 4, 5 hurricanes this year. It's been absolutely crazy. Puerto Rico is destroyed. Barbuda is destroyed. It's insane. They need help. They need money. So since that conversation was a little bit convicting for me, because while I have been pointing you all to donate, I have not yet myself donated. Instead, I've just been telling you guys to donate, which is, you know, synonymous with like just hashtagging without actually doing anything. So I'm going to be putting some of my own money towards that this week. And I hope you guys will too, because there's a big need there. So thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for donating. If you have, pray. If you can't, just help in whatever way you can. Give freely and give joyfully. That's the more important thing. And thanks for listening to Tech Reformation. So Tank, you have some thoughts on Japanese Christian media, which I am so excited to hear.
I do. This has just been over maybe 2-3 weeks. I don't know. I've been really thinking about this topic. There's, with very limited Christians in Japan, and many, many of the Christians being old, so like 60 and above, you know, Japan being a tech center of the world, one of them. I don't want to say the center, but you know, it's big into technology. We would hope that all the innovations that come with technology would also be part of the Christian world, but it's really not. And it kind of follows, just as we kind of see it in many churches, they are lagging behind in technology, even in America or probably all over the world. I've been in America, so I can speak for that one. But just because technology often costs money, and developing technology costs money, and oftentimes churches are using their money for different reasons, it's easy to fall behind what companies or whatever are using. But anyway, that's really true in Japan. And I heard a story recently about a Japanese guy who was in a cult. And he started Googling some questions in English. His English is very good. Mm-hmm. And he stumbled upon the Gospel Coalition. And he started reading the Gospel Coalition. And he developed solid biblical theology and began reading the Bible for himself. And he was like, hey, guys, some of the things you're teaching is not okay. And they're like, be quiet and listen to the leader, you know. And so eventually he broke free from the cult, which was a big decision because, one, that's like, you know, his family was a part of that. Two, they were paying for his college, so he had to give that up. But now he's baptized in a solid church and growing. But it just started making me think, like if a Japanese person searches these questions online, what are they going to find?
Mm-hmm.
And I actually asked one of my friends about that just tonight. And he said... his dorm, it does this interesting thing where it's a Christian dorm, but almost nobody's Christians in it. He's about the only one. But they have different people lead the Bible study every week, even if they're not Christians. So these two guys led a Bible study over Job, and they Googled, like, why was God angry at Job? Like, why did all this happen at Job? And like, well, maybe he sinned because he wasn't willing to consider his friends might be right about his sin. Like, even if he didn't sin, he wasn't willing to consider it. And so that was what they taught at the Bible study, because they saw it on some online discussion forum in Japanese. And it's just like, it's a reality that with English, we have a wealth of materials that we can't even imagine. Any subject we want, we can go find church history or commentary on Job or 100 different sermons from pastors that we know are trustworthy. And there's none of that in Japan. I feel like with my background in technology and with hopefully being able to live here a long time, like I want to see if I can be a part of changing that. And so just like some simple ideas I've had, and this partially was out of selfishness because I want to listen to Japanese in my head to get better at the language. It's like if just pastors started putting their sermons in podcast form, like people use podcasts to learn English and learn other things. I know that Japanese podcasts are out there. Like, yeah, we have a wealth of solid Christian teachers now putting podcasts online, and that's an easy first step. And if pastors could start writing blogs, then that would be awesome too. And if things like Gospel Coalition could begin being translated in Japanese or other languages, then like just begin the saturation of a people that is a first world country, you know, that like they're rich, they're fluent, they're 99% able to read. Just funny because I can't think of the word. But anyway, they seem to have everything, you know, but they don't have Jesus. And that darkness shows up in depression and alcohol and suicide and divorces and broken families, all those things. But as far as the wealth that's there and the technology that's there, they have it all. And it's a medium that I feel like is being neglected. And so, yeah, I've just been really thinking on that recently. And one final thing. It's all kind of reminded me of an article on Gospel Coalition. And it says how Mormons are winning the internet. And
yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. And so it just basically talks about how it gives a little story at the beginning, which is a good story. But it points out how Mormons have the best SEO and search engine optimization. And if you search questions about Christianity, oftentimes LDS.org will pop up. And and so the people that are answering people's questions are the Mormons, if they go through Google. And just as we want to fight that in America and have solid theology coming up when people are asking questions of Google, I would love for that to begin in Japan as well. When people asking questions about life, they don't see Buddhism, they don't see Shintoism, they don't see just atheism, but they see what Jesus has to say.
Yeah. And
perhaps they can find life.
Yeah. So my first thought would have been what you suggested, like to get started, would be starting to translate current English material into Japanese. Is there something that we should be thinking about further beyond that as far as engaging with Japanese culture? Because I know like an American tendency is to be like, oh, we'll just translate our stuff. We'll teach them how to be like us as Christians. and that's the, you know, kind of that American Christianity. We kind of imbue Christianity with like some American ideals that don't relate well with other cultures, doesn't meet other cultures where they are.
Are you saying that American Christianity isn't global Christianity, Derek?
Well, that's
mind-blowing. I'm kidding.
Yeah, but there, yeah, no, it's a good point. A lot of people don't think about that. And often I don't think about that many times either. I often bring topics to the show that are very American, even though I have a friend in Tokyo and I have a friend in Australia. Like, I just don't often think about those countries. So would there be problems with doing just direct translation? Are there other things like, we got to start somewhere, I guess, but maybe we should think about like starting specifically Japanese companies as well to be like a Japanese gospel coalition with Japanese people talking to Japanese people.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be awesome. Yeah. I think if the true cultural transformation will happen within the culture, not without the culture. And that was my first two things that I said were Japanese pastors putting their podcasts online.
Exactly.
And Japanese pastors beginning to write their own blogs. Mm-hmm. But Gospel Coalition has such a wealth of really solid information, and it already exists, and translation is often easier than writing. And so, yeah, if it would be cool, you know, if like there was a partnership with places around the world that began not only translating, but a coalition of the gospel internationally, you know, and they had their own writers that were not only translating stuff, but yeah, writing their own content as well. That'd be incredible.
Yeah. But, I know there is now a Gospel Coalition Australia, so I guess there's no reason why in the future they can add other countries, you know what I mean? Like, I guess it's quite feasible that they could have a Gospel Coalition Japan in a few years' time.
And that's all we have for the show this week. If you would like to get in contact with us, you can hit us up in our Slack team. That's basically like a fancy internet chat room that you can access, that you can sign up for and access at slack.techreformation.com. We have a great community going on there. We would appreciate your voice in the discussion. We talk about what's going on, whatever we talked about in this episode, and we've got like a ton of other topics too that you can jump in. And if you're just, you know, excited about or aghast at the new iPhone 10 or whatever, you know, you can talk about whatever. You can find a channel for your topic. So connect with us in Slack.
You can also hit us up on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @TechReformation. Feel free to follow us or retweet us or any of those other Twitter things. We'd love to hear from you.
And if you have the new 280 count Twitter functionality, you can 280 character Twitter functionality, you can use all those characters to talk to us. We don't have them yet, but you can exercise your superiority over us for a limited amount of time. Act now. We'll throw in a free Ginsu knife.
You can also visit our website to search for past shows and topics. Just head to techreformation.com. We'd also love it if you could review us on iTunes and recommend us on Overcast, or even better, share the episode with a friend. It really helps us out.
This has been Tech Reformation. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week. And I ain't looking back. Looking back. No, I ain't looking back. Ryan, Tank. Should we?
I feel like we're not friends anymore. You're just calling me by my first name.
Who is Mr. this Ryan person? We don't have a Ryan on this podcast, dude.
Oh, it's my fault though, isn't it? Because I wrote Ryan on the show notes.
That's right.
I'm not friends with myself.